Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
Good morning, Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM. How are you doing out there? Martina Cox's life changed forever after her husband was brutally attacked in a 17-second ordeal that left him with a life-changing brain injury. Well, in a new book called With Hope in Your Heart, Martina Cox writes about what life was like before and after her husband's horrific attack, and she joins me now. Martina, good morning.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Martina, can you tell me, first of all, a little bit about Sean and the life you shared before this terrible assault?
We just had a very, we were just a very normal family living our life in Dunboyne in County Meath. Sean was working. He was a sales director in an electrical company. I was and still am working for Dun Stores. Our three children, all kind of grown up teenagers. Emma was actually just getting ready to do her leaving certs. The other two were in college. So just a pretty normal, everyday family, you know, going about our business. Mm-hmm.
And for some people who just may not be familiar with what actually happened, can you tell us about the events of the dreadful day back in April 2018?
Yeah, Sean went to the match with his brother Marty. They got the tickets, it was a very last minute thing. Mm-hmm. So they flew over that morning really early. They were coming back the next day because Martin's son was actually making his confirmation the next day. Basically, they were on their way to actually pick up their tickets, and obviously a group of hooligans came along, and known as the Ultras, I think. And, you know, there was a lot of kind of hostility in the air. There was a lot, you know, apparently the atmosphere wasn't great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I suppose before Martin knew it, Sean was attacked, brutally attacked by there was three of them involved in it. You know, there was a belt kind of swinging in the air and, you know, a leather belt with buckles. And then another guy hit him and Sean went down. And, you know, Martin, I think, was just about ready to say, Sean, we need to get out of here. And before he could do it, he was down. And I mean, it was just like, as you said, 17 seconds of absolute madness.
You describe in vivid detail the moment you got the phone call from Liverpool and when the news about Sean began to emerge. Can you still recall how that all unfolded?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was in the evening time. I was in the kitchen. I got a call from Sean's sister-in-law, Aisling, and she basically said that she'd got a call to say that Sean had been attacked and that he'd got a hit in the head. He was on his way in an ambulance with Martin. Peter, that Sean's brother, was on his way over to me. It was all a bit kind of blurry and Nobody really knew what was actually happening. So Peter came over. Jack was in the sitting room. He was actually watching the Liverpool match. Sean was upstairs studying. My other daughter was out actually at Irish dancing. So then they all kind of gathered and, you know, the next minute we get a call from the Aintree Hospital, which Sean was brought to initially. And they basically said that Sean had a severe bleed on the brain and he needed to go into surgery, emergency surgery immediately. And that it was basically, you know, it was very serious. Mm. And we needed to make our way over there in the morning because obviously it was too late. And, you know, the next 24 hours were going to be crucial. I mean, we just didn't really know what was happening. It was just like horrendous to be hit with that. It's very kind of hard to take it all in. Yeah, it was all very surreal. But very real when I seen him then.
After a month in hospital in Liverpool, Sean opened his eyes and you say it was like winning the lotto.
Yeah, I mean, it really was at that stage because we waited and we waited. We sat there hours on end, all of us, you know, myself, the kids, Sean's family, some of my family, friends, and we talked to him, sang to him, held his hand. And there was nothing for so long. And then when this happened, like it was like winning the lotto to us, even though we knew it was the start of a very, very long journey ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this was the beginning of 2 years of hospitals and rehab centres. Can you tell me about some of that journey? What was that like?
The first place was the Walton Centre, which, I mean, they saved Sean's life. So we're kind of eternally grateful to them. Like, I remember when Sean was, he was being airlifted back to Dublin. I mean, that was an awful moment because he just looked so fragile and so, you know, just so vulnerable. We then went to Beaumont. Sean was in Beaumont for 18 weeks, I think it was, awaiting to get into the NRH, because that's what, you know, you have to go from one place to the next. And unfortunately, he had to wait that length of time because there's a waiting list in the NRH. So then we got to the NRH and he was there for nearly 9 months.
Did he know what was happening? I mean, could you talk to him?
We talked a lot to him. Yeah. I mean, in the early days, he didn't realize what was happening because he was just, you know, it took a long time for him to come to. Like, being honest, it did. But I suppose as he got to the NRH, he kind of, you know, he was more alert then.
That's the National Rehabilitation Hospital.
The National Rehabilitation, yeah. And like even now, I mean, he's a lot different now to what he was then. Like he's improved. He's made a lot of gains, which is great. But like we kind of talked him through, like, because he was 9 months in the NRH. Like it was an old hospital. Mm. The ward was very, you know, it was like a cubicle with a curtain behind it. It wasn't, you know, ideal, but he didn't have a window to look out. You know, it was very hard. Sean stuck in the same place for 9 months, just, you know, it was like a little corridor, just people going up and down. So that was really hard, you know. And then the next step was to he actually went to a nursing home for a couple of weeks. It was actually in the summer of 2019 until he went to Steps Rehabilitation in Sheffield. We went there in September of 2019.
Now, you spoke there about gains that he's made and he was making. Can you just tell me about where was he and how far he's come, so to speak?
I mean, he's not walking and he's not talking, but he's saying he's doing more. He's got more strength. You know, his right side and his left side, particularly his right side, is stronger. He just got sturdier. I suppose 9 months ago, Sean couldn't have sat at the side of the bed. He would have toppled over. A lot of work has been done on his rehabilitation. Whilst he can't say string sentences, but he's got more words. If you prompt him, he can say an awful lot more. And some words just come out as well.
Yeah.
But I suppose the big thing is he understands. His understanding is a lot better, which is great. So he knows what's happening, knows what's going on. He kind of gestures a lot. He uses his hand, you know, I know because I know him so well what he means. I think that's really important as well, that we actually know what he wants and, you know, what his wishes are, you know. So that's good.
That's amazing.
You kind of just take the small gains and go, do you know what, that's really everything that he does, that everything new that he does is a positive for us. And that's kind of the way we work it, you know. But like he's a lot since he came home, he probably has made a good bit of progress. Harder for me to see because I'm with him every day. But when people that haven't seen him, say in a couple of weeks, go, oh my God, look, he's doing this now, or he's doing, you know. So he is making gains.
It's great to hear. Can I ask you, how does Sean spend his time now that he is back home?
He's doing a lot of physio. Like he's got physio 3-4 times a week. Wow. He's got speech and language twice a week. He has music therapy twice a week. So he's a lot. He's a kind of a busy schedule. But in between that, like he needs rests because
it's tiring.
You know, it's very tiring. Yeah. And, you know, when Sean has a session, he needs a break after that. So, I mean, we're lucky in the sense that we, you know, I've kind of done out a program for him and he'll always have a rest in between a therapy. So it kind of, it fills his day as such. And then, you know, like obviously he doesn't do anything at the weekends. We just relax. He watches a lot of sport still, which is, you know, he still has his love for sport, which is fantastic.
He must love this because the foreword for the book is written by Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp. I mean, the support from the club and the fans has been extraordinary, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they've really taken Sean into their heart. I think, you know, the saying that Liverpool, we are family, is very true.
Yeah.
I probably didn't realise it before until now. And I see, and it's ongoing. The support is still there, which is fantastic. You know, I think Sean he's part of the history of LFC now.
Can I ask you, because of course what happened wasn't an accident, how do you feel about the man who did this to Sean?
I don't really dwell on it, to be honest with you, because I, you know, it's not going to do me any good. You know, it was upsetting at the time, but I've kind of parked it and moved. I have to move on because we need kind of positivity in our lives. And, you know, if I was giving off these bad vibes to Sean, that wouldn't be good for him, for his recovery. So I've moved on. We all have as a family because we can't change it.
Yeah.
You know, it's whatever we think or whatever happened, it's not going to change the situation for Sean.
I mean, Sean, he's been through a terrible ordeal. But how have you and the children been through all of this? Is it very much up and down, or you seem very focused on keeping a positive environment in the house?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really big upheaval, you know, the unknown, you know, like we just didn't know how Sean was going to recover and, you know, and how we were going to deal with it. But, you know, I think we've learned to live with it. I think the biggest gain was getting Sean home, because we've actually coped and dealt with it really well. I think, you know, we're trying to normalise things as much as we can for both Sean and for us. And it's working, you know, it's good. Like, it's, you know, we had 2 years without Sean being in our lives, in our home, and now we're all under the one roof. And, like, you couldn't really ask for much more than that, you know, given the situation.
Yeah. Finally, Martina, I believe you're looking forward to being able to have a big party for the local community when we finally get through COVID. I know we're not sure when that's going to happen, hopefully after December, but community spirit is very important to you, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Sean was involved in the GAA, and they've literally, I mean, the whole community have kind of wrapped their arms around us and helped, and just, you know, it's been phenomenal, really.
Well, listen, I just want to say congratulations on the book, and thanks for joining us on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It really puts, I think people listen to this, it puts a lot of things into perspective, for one. I just want to take this opportunity to wish yourself and Sean and your lovely family the very best of luck in the future. And with hope in your heart, The Sean Cox Story by Martina Cox with Susan Keogh is published by Gill Books. Its price is $16.99 and is available everywhere now. Martina, the very best of luck to you, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There we go. We'll be back right after these. Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.